This is DW News, and these are our top stories. 2 million people have now died from COVID-19 in the year since the outbreak began. Governments around the world are racing to vaccinate their populations, but have so far failed to stem rising numbers of infections and deaths. New variants of coronavirus that scientists believe are more transmissible have been blamed for the surge in infections. U.S. vaccine maker Pfizer has informed the European Commission that it will not be able to fulfill all of its promised deliveries in the coming weeks because of building works intended to boost production at its plant in Belgium. Canada will also face delays, though supplies to the United States will not be affected. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's CDU party has begun its conference, taking place digitally this year due to the pandemic. Delegates will elect a new leader to replace Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, who is standing down. Three candidates are in the running for the job. The vote will take place on Saturday, and the winner will be confirmed in a week's time. This is DW News from Berlin. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DW News or visit our website, dw.com.
Today, just over a year after COVID-19 was first identified in the Chinese city of Wuhan, the worldwide death toll has passed 2 million. But hope is on the horizon. Vaccines are being developed at record speeds. Medicines regulators are giving them the green light, and vaccination programs are being rolled out in country after country. So what makes a good vaccination program? And when will normal be normal again? I'm Phil Gale in Berlin, and this is The Day.
It's rough to see people who are really sick, and we have to tell them there's not much we can do. It's heartbreaking.
I really believe in this vaccine. I also got it, and this week I'll get the second dose.
And we're seeing far more people being admitted to intensive care units that are now becoming overwhelmed.
We are determined and really happy that we are getting vaccinated.
We're still in London admitting the equivalent of a really big hospital every single day.
Welcome to The Day. Even as countries race to vaccinate their populations, the COVID-19 death toll continues to rise at an alarming rate. The number of people who have died of the disease has just passed 2 million, and that rate is getting faster. By early March last year, as the virus began to ravage northern Italy, the death toll crept past 5,000. In less than a month, that had surged fivefold to 50,000. By September, around 9 months after the novel coronavirus was first identified, deaths had reached 1 million. Well, just 4 months later, that number has doubled to the 2 million we see today. The world's highest death tolls have been in the US, India and Brazil, with the UK fast catching up with more than 86,000. Now, Germany, which had been praised for its efforts during the first wave, has seen death rates shoot up, with a total now approaching 45,000. Well, one of the countries making headline-grabbing progress with its vaccination program is Israel. The government there says it hopes to inoculate every Israeli citizen, around 9 million of them, in the next 3 months. DW's Tanya Kremer reports.
Nurse Mali Michaeli and her team work almost around the clock to administer the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine here in Bat Yam, a town south of Tel Aviv. About 150,000 people are being vaccinated daily throughout the country. I really believe in this vaccine. I also got it, and this week I'll get the second dose. We didn't have, thank God, any allergic reactions. It's like a flu shot. It is a very gentle vaccine. It's good. The cultural center turned makeshift vaccination point is run by Clalit, one of Israel's four health management organizations, which provide care through their own clinics. As every citizen has to be registered with an HMO, using the highly digitalized infrastructure has proven decisive for the fast rollout. First priority were people over the age of 60, healthcare workers, and people with underlying health conditions. Now it is the turn of the over 50s. It's great. I didn't even feel the shot. I work as a special needs teacher, and we are all kind of in the line of fire. It's an absolute must to be vaccinated. Younger people are also called up to receive surplus doses of the vaccine, which would otherwise be wasted. The early purchase of the BioNTech-Pfizer vaccine by the government has contributed to this speedy immunization campaign. However, coronavirus infection rates are still high, and the government tightened the country's third lockdown once again last week.
One challenge is vaccinating and earning enough time so the vaccines will start to work. And on the other hand, we have the third wave in Israel, which has been rising, and a huge number of severely sick people hospitalized in the hospitals.
Ramallah in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, a COVID-19 testing center. Infections remain high as well, but here people will have to wait to receive their vaccines. The Palestinian Authority announced this week that it has signed deals with four companies to secure vaccines, among them also the Russian-developed vaccine Sputnik. In the news, they say it is not yet approved and they want to give it to us. We don't know what will happen. But at the end, we hope that we will get the appropriate vaccine and we will be done with this crisis. We want all of us to take it to feel psychologically at ease because we are in a constant state of worry. And they will have other options. Palestinians have also signed up to the COVAX program, which aims to help low-income countries to get a fair share of vaccines for around 20% of their population.
Prashant Yadav is a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and a professor at INSEAD. He lectures in global health and social medicine at Harvard Medical School in the US and has a particular interest in healthcare supply chains and operations management. The perfect person to give us a snapshot of where the world is in terms of its vaccination programs. Welcome to DW. In those countries that have vaccination programs, where is it going well and where are you seeing problems?
So I think we, as the news reported, Israel is a country where we're seeing very fast rates of vaccination. Part of it has to do with how the planning has been put in place before the start of vaccination. It also has to do with the underlying structure of the health system. We see considerable heterogeneity in states across the US. We also see some countries in the European Union doing considerably better as compared to others. I think in the end, it boils down to how well is the system communicating information in two directions, one being from the central planning, the federal agencies in a country, to the last clinic, which is vaccinating, and then information flowing back from the clinics to the planners at the central level. And, you know, I think there are countries which have managed that well and there are countries which haven't. The second part, which is important, is we focused way too much on just thinking about do we have sufficient supply? And I think that is important. But at the same time, in the end, it is about matching demand and supply. And the techniques for matching demand and supply require us to think about prioritization, dose reservation in ways that are different than just when we're working with a scenario where it's about scarce supply being allocated to known demand.
I'm intrigued by this idea of matching demand and supply. So it's not just as simple as get as much of it out to as many people as we can.
Yeah, so think of it this way. In the US, we started with the idea that we would do sequential prioritization, which means we will first vaccinate our phase 1A, then we will go to phase 1B, then to phase 2. And what that does is if the number of people who are supposed to show up at a clinic from phase 1A in a given day ends up being less, then we have extra doses, which we then need to figure out what to do with them. But if instead we do parallel or simultaneous vaccination with the priority being kept for those who are in phase 1A, then allows us to match demand and supply better. The second is if we fragment the demand into multiple smaller clinics, then the uncertainty in demand in each clinic is higher. But if we pool it, and do it in a mass vaccination clinic, such as a stadium, a community center, a parking lot of a large hospital, then I think we pool the demand, and as a result, we are better able to match it to the given supply.
OK, that's very clear. I want to listen now to the executive director of the World Health Organization, Mike Ryan, speaking today in Geneva, warning that vaccines are not the sole solution to this pandemic.
And we did also warn in 2020 that if we were to rely entirely on vaccines as the only solution, we could lose the very control measures that we had at our disposal at the time. The vaccine is light at the end of the tunnel. It is a hugely, it's a massive advance, but it doesn't answer and it won't address every question that we have. We have to continue doing the other measures.
Right, so Prashant Yadav, it sounds like that even if we do have mass vaccination programs and they are successfully rolled out, we're still going to have to wait some time for a return to a maskless society, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, so we have to keep in mind that vaccines are our most important tool, but not the only tool. And we have to continue with multiple public health interventions, whether it is use of masks or social distancing or better ventilation, tracing, isolation. All of those measures need to be kept in place. The rate of vaccination will help us get faster to a point where we can do away with them, but we are nowhere close to that yet.
And so when does it stop? Because it sounds like, OK, the vaccinations, that helps us get the number of cases down, that helps us to get the test and trace systems working. And so when can we just be normal again?
Very hard question to answer. And again, I'm not an epidemiologist or a person who has the training to be answering this, but my first reaction would be, only when we vaccinated a large fraction of the global population, so not just the population in our individual countries, but globally, once we've reached a point where we have 50, 60% of the global population vaccinated, that's probably the time when we can start thinking about becoming a little bit lax with our other public health measures.
And so that fits in quite neatly with something I've been thinking about, because we have this COVAX system where less rich countries can actually pay for these vaccines. From what you've said there, it sounds like it's in everyone's benefit, in the rich countries' benefit, for poorer countries to have these vaccines, because otherwise no one gets anywhere.
Yeah, so it's a combination of both. If we are it's both in our self-interest and in our altruistic interest to ensure that there is global access to COVID of safe and highly efficacious COVID-19 vaccines, because it helps the world as a whole, not just populations who live in developing countries, but the populations in high-income countries equally.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us. So Prashant Yadav from Harvard University Medical School.
Thank you.
Well, the United Kingdom has been plunged into further crisis by a new variant of the coronavirus. There, the number of cases and deaths has been skyrocketing since December. Many hospitals are overwhelmed with COVID patients and are no longer able to carry out other operations. DW's Charlotte Chelson-Pill reports this is taking a huge mental and physical toll on the population and on medical workers trying to save lives.
I've never seen so many ambulances queuing, and I've never spent such extended periods of time with people waiting for a space.
Over the last 3-4 weeks, the majority of patients are now coronavirus.
And take a nice deep breath.
Every region in England has more people in hospital now than they did in the first wave in the spring.
In our case, we've gone up by double the number of patients.
We're still in London admitting the equivalent of a really big hospital every single day.
Whilst having higher numbers of staff and frontline staff who are off sick or isolating or have tested positive themselves. I've just finished 10 days of isolation because my wife tested positive, so she's also a paramedic. The personal protective equipment that we were wearing was, from our perspective, not quite enough, and a number of our friends and colleagues were in the same situation, and they've also tested positive over the last few weeks.